Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kufla Amud Hey Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. We're beginning the new parak, Reshita Geiz. In terms of the Reshita Geiz, you have to break it down into two parts. First of all, Reshit. Why is it called Reshit? It's not clear from the Torah exactly what the meaning of the word Reshit is. In Truma, when we speak about Reshit, we're really speaking about the first, which means that the Reshit Gedancha is the first of those that you take off, the first of the produce that you have, that's given as the Truma. Over here by Reshita Geiz, it's not as clear. Does that mean the first of the shearings? Or does Reshit mean the best of the shearings? Or does Reshit mean you should do it in the beginning and not later on? So all of those are possibilities as to what the word Reshit means over here. Because again, unlike by Truma, where the Reshit has distinct meaning, that it's the first and best of what you have, over here, it's not as clear, although the way that we pass in the halacha, that it's better to give it in the beginning, even though b'diavad, if you do it later on, or even at the end, it's still called reshita geiz. Nevertheless, there seems to be a preference for giving it as reshit. Now, Rashi says over here that the word reshit means, kol ha-gozetsono, anybody who shears his sheep, ben tlaim, ben zkenim, doesn't matter if they're young or old, which implies that you could have multiple shearings of an animal and still be chayav each time you shear the animal. Vafilo gozuzan me'apiyamim, notein mimena matana lekohen. Every time you shear it, then you have to give a gift to the kohen. The Rashi in Ketubot on Kufei Amud Bet says, shebechol shana shegozei izotan chayav litein. And it's only a yearly obligation, not a obligation every time that you shear the sheep. And that's the same thing that he says by his Perush al Torah. And so therefore, reshit would mean the first of the shearings from that year. It seems to be that if you shear an animal multiple times during a given year, you'd only have to give once. If you shear it each year, then each year presents a new opportunity or a new time to give the shearings. So in that context, Rashi's view of the word reshit would be the first time you shear this animal during that year. So if you shear it multiple times, you only have to give the first time, as opposed to mishana l'shana, where every time you shear it, you would have to give it. Which means that if you took off on the first time, you wouldn't have to give it if you were shearing it again that year. But if you didn't take it off on the first time, then you would have to add together what you did on the first time and then the second time in order to give reshita geiz. So it truly benefits you to give the reshita geiz from the first time that you do it, because then you're patur in the remainder of that year. If you don't do it, then you add all of it together, no matter how many times you shear it during the year, and then you have to give reshita geiz from the total amount until you actually give reshita geiz. That also might be the definition of reshit over here, which is the first time you do it in any given year, that's when you are chayav. So then, the geiz is the shearings, and as we're going to see in the Mishnah, that the word shearing is only used with regards to wool. It's not used with regards to other items that you might shave off or items that you would use to make clothing with. And therefore, it's going to limit the scope of which animals are chayavim in the geiz, in the shearing over here. Reshita geiz noeg ba'aretz u'b'chutz la'aretz. It has application both inside of Eretz Yisrael and chutz la'aretz. It's not a mitzvah tuliyah ba'aretz. And therefore, it's applicable even outside of Eretz Yisrael. Bifnei ha'bayit, v'shalo bifnei ha'bayit. Whether the mikdash is extant or is not extant. Bichulin, avalo b'muktashim. It has application by chulin, but not by muktashim. The Gemara will discuss why that is. Chomer b'zro v'lechayayim b'cheiba m'reshita geiz. The matanot kuna that we learned about in the previous prayer have a stringency above that of reshita geiz. Shazro v'lechayayim v'cheiba nuagim b'bakaru batzon. They apply to both cattle and to flock. And that's because the pasuk there says, imshor imseh. So both of those items are included in the matanot of the Zra, the Chayayim, and the Kebab. Bimerubeh or bimuat. Doesn't matter how many you have. If you shecht one animal, you shecht 10 animals. Each one independently is Chayav in the Zra, the Chayayim, and the Kebab. So there's no quantitative measure as to what you are Chayav. Any animal that you shecht, you're going to be Chayav it. Reshita geiz, enu egele berechelot. That is not true of Reshita geiz, which only applies to sheep. And it only has application when you have sufficient quantity to be chayav, which the Mishnah is going to explain in a moment. Now, what is that minimum quantity that you need? But it's only applicable to rechelot because it says reshit degancha tiroshcha v'yitzarecha, reshit geiz tzonacha titein lo. There's a limit to tzon, which is flock animals, not cattle. That's distinct already for zera'ah lechayim v'kibah. And the Mishnah intentionally uses the word rechelot over here to tell you that it only applies to sheep, not to goats. Tzon will subsume within it both sheep and goats, but geiz and the process of shearing is only applicable to the wool of a sheep. It is not applicable to the shaving of the hair of a goat. And therefore, even though you can technically cut off the hair of the goat and use it as a raw material, it's not counted as reshit geiz somcha, because geiz is a process of shearing, which is not the way that you would describe the removal of the hair of the goat. What is this amount that you need, this quantity that you need to meet the threshold above which you will be chayav? You have to have two sheep. Shneamar, pasuk in Yeshayahu, it says, v'yah b'yom hu, yichayah ish eglat bakar u'shtei tzon. So on that day, a person will sustain eglat bakar, so that's one, and then shtei tzon. It says you'll have two, and it'll be called tzon. That shows you that already two have a din of tzon, and the Torah tells you, reshit geiz tzoncha titein lo. Beit Hillel omrim, chamesh. You have to have five. Shneamar, because it says by Avigayo, batamaher Avigayo, batikach matayim lechem ushnayim nivle yayin, v'chamesh tzon asuyot, v'chamesh saim kali umeyat simikim umatayim velim etesem alachamurim. She knows that David HaMelech is about to come and kill out her husband and everybody that's working with them because of their refusal to support David in this situation. And so Abigail goes to placate him, and then she grabs all these materials to take out to David HaMelech, the gift to him, in order to appease him and tell him to not come and take the lives of all these people. It's just because her husband was acting inappropriately, but don't take it out on everybody else. As part of those gifts, it says, V'chamesh tzon asuyot. So first of all, the chamesh tzon tells you that the minimum to be called tzon is chamesh. And then the word asuyot is translated as masot et balehen, that it provides the new mitzvah for their owners. So you see that chamesh tzon is considered to be the minimum threshold for that which you are a chayav. Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus Omer, chamesh rechelot gozuzot mane upras, chayavot bereshit hageiz. Now that on top of that, not only is there a minimum number of sheep that you need to shear, there's also a minimum quantity of wool that is taken off the sheep. And here, Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus says, each one of the five sheep needs to produce at least maneh upras. 100 dinarim is a maneh. Pras is half a maneh, which would be 50 dinarim. Each one of them has to produce 150 dinarim worth of wool. For the five animals, you'd have to have 750 dinarim worth of wool, but it can't be the total quantity number. You have to get each one meets the minimum threshold of 150 dinarim. Otherwise, it doesn't count towards the five that you need in order to be chayav in reshit hageiz. Kamim amrim chamesh rechelot gozuzot kol shein. It has to be five sheep that produce any amount. The truth is that it's not any amount. In the Gemara, we'll see there is a shiur for the chachamim, which is 12 slaim per rachel. Just in relationship to Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus, their shear is so small that they just call it a kol shein, because the differential is so great between what they're demanding and what he's demanding. He's demanding 150 dinarim per. They're saying 12 slaim, which is 48 dinarim per. That's a third of the size of what Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus requires, and therefore they call it a kol shein. V'kama notnim lo. So this is not a continuation of the previous statement, but rather how much is considered to be a netinah to the kohen. If you have reshit hageiz to give, how many kohanim can you give it to? Well, that depends on how much you can give to each kohen. Their minimum shiur of what you can give to a kohen is mishkal chamesh slayim b'yuda, something that weighs five sela in Yuda, sheinesa slayim b'galil, which is the equivalent of 10 sela in the Galil, which is the sela in Yuda was twice the size of the sela in the Galil. So if you get five slayim in the Yuda, it's the same as 10 slayim in the Galil. Miluban, that's when it's already washed and whitened, bleached, velotzoi, and not when it's dirty or brown, not clean. Kedei lasot mimenu beged katan, because with that you have the capacity to make with it a small piece of clothing. Shneamar, because the pasuk says beshit geisoncha titein lo shebo kedei matana. You have to give something that is of significance meaning that it is a present, it's a gift. So it has to be able to be utilized for something that will be productive, and therefore you need to give him a minimum shiur to get to a beged katan. And Chachamim were mishaer that beged katan requires of bleached or clean wool, 5 sela in Yehuda, which is 10 sela in the Galil. Now, the obligation to give the wool is not that you have to bleach it and then give it. It's just telling you how much wool you have to give that will result in bleached wool being that amount. So you have to give 5 sela worth of bleached wool because that's what produces the beged, but you give it before it's bleached. So you have to make sure to give enough weight in there so that post the bleaching, it will get to that number in order to be a matana. Now, that's the size of matana. So that's the minimum shear you have to give to the Kohen. So depending on how much of the reshita gaze you have to give, then you can break it down into smaller portions to give to the Kohanim, but you can't give less than the weight of 5 sela in Yehuda to each individual Kohen. So if you have less than that, you've got to aggregate it and make sure give it to less Kohanim, but give them a larger size. Lo yispik litno lo, ad shetzavo. If you didn't give the reshita gaze before you dye it, patur, then you don't have to give it anymore. This goes back to Rav Chista's din that we saw earlier, on Kuf Lamed Amud Bet, where Rav Chista says, a mazik matanot kuna u'shachlan. You damage them or eat them, patur mit l'shalim. You don't have to pay for it. And then the Gemara goes on to explain why Rav Chista says that. From that we learned already that if you do, quote-unquote, damage, theft to the property, the matanot kuna, then you don't have to give it, you're patur. And so over here, already dying it, as Rashi says, is a sufficient shinui that it's no longer intact. It's no longer in its original form. And that's why you don't have to give it. Libno velotzvao, if he bleached it but has yet to dye it, chayav, then he does have to give it, meaning that the bleaching process is not a significant enough of a change to classify it as no longer being reshita gaze. So even though you're supposed to give it when it's soy, when it's in its dirty state, in the sheared state, nevertheless, if you do bleach it, you still have to give it because bleaching is not so significant that it's considered to be a shinoi, as considered to be, quote-unquote, that he's been mazikit. On the other hand, once you dyed it, that's a significant enough change whereby we already consider you to be a, quote-unquote, gazlan, because you now made a shinoi and took it away. That shinoi will make you then patur from having to give it. It says, it's connected to the Gemara at the end of Baba Kama, which says that if it's a reversible activity that you did, then it's not considered to be a shinui for a kinyan gezela. And then if you do an irreversible process to it, then at that point already you have a kinyan gezela. And we just said before that hamazik or ochel, matnot kiuna, according to Rav Chista, are pturim. Alokeach keitzono shel oved kochavim. You purchase the shearings from an oved kochavim, patur mireshita geiz. Then you don't have to give reshita geiz. We'll discuss this in the Gemara, because it says geiz tzoncha, and it has to be your tzon. And this tzon is not your tzon. It belongs to the goy. It doesn't belong to you. And Rashi over here says that this is even if you buy it before it's sheared, meaning that you could buy it from a goy after he's already sheared it. That's the way the Rambam explains the mission over here. And in that way, you'd be patur if you purchased it from the goy, the shearings themselves. Rashi over here says that even if it's still on the animal, b'mechubar, then you still, when you purchase the shearings from the animal while they're attached, you still patur because it's not your tzon. It doesn't have to be your shearings, it has to be your tzon. And since over here it's not your animal, even though it's your shearings, you're not chayav. Halukeach geiz tzono shel chaveiro, a person who purchases the shearings from his friend, im shi'er ha-mocher chayav. If you left over tzon for the seller, then the mocher is chayav to provide the reshita geiz. And that's because people don't sell matnot kuna. You don't really have a right to sell the matnot kuna. Therefore, when you sold it to the Israel, he assumed he was buying the shearings ex the reshita geiz. He doesn't expect to be chayav in reshita geiz. On the other hand, lo shi'er, if the mocher sold all of his animals, all of his shearings, then a lokeach chayav. The lokeach has to know in that case that if he's buying all the shearings and the mocher has nothing left, then he's the one that is responsible for the reshita geiz. So he should have priced that in. Where he left it over for the mocher, his assumption is that he's not buying reshita geiz, and therefore he doesn't price it in, because the mocher has that which to give from. The other hand, if the mocher sells him everything, he has nothing left to give, then the buyer has to make the assumption that he's the one responsible, and he has to include that in the price, that he's definitely going to give up some of what he bought to reshita geiz. Hayu lo shnei minim, If the seller has two different types, species, shkufot vilibanot, those that are either brownish, blackish, Rashi says here, they're not black and they're not white, somewhere in between. So whether that means brown, whether that means that they are splotchy, then those that are white, macharlo shkufot aval lilibanot, if he sold them only one type and kept the other type for himself, zicharim aval lo nekevot, or he has males and females, and he sold them all the males or all the females and kept the other, zeh noten latzmo, vezeh noten latzmo. Each one of them independently has to give. The way the Mishnah reads b'pshituto is that if you separate out species or gender, then there's some way to divide up these animals that makes them as if the mocher sold everything in that category. Once he sells everything in the category, then it becomes the buyer's issue in terms of the reshita geis, like we saw before. Mocher leaves nothing behind, lukeach is kayav. So this would seem to be a subset of that, which is you don't have to look at his entirety of his flock. You can look at subsets of his flock if they have some sort of factor that makes a common denominator between them. And he sold you all those items with the common denominator. That's as if he sold you his whole flock and you're going to be chayav. That which he retained, he's going to be chayav for. That's a simple reading of the Mishnah. The Gemara will reread the Mishnah over here to indicate that it's always on the mocher. Give the reshita geis because he has what to give from. He had residuals that he left behind and therefore the buyer does not assume he's buying it. And what it means, zeh noten latzmo is that the mocher, the seller, should, if he's smart, would not give all of it from his own animals. He would give some of it from his animals and then buy from the animals that he sold to the other party back that reshita geis to give because the quality of what he left behind was better than that which he sold. He kept for himself the white sheep, that's better quality wool because it's already white, versus the dark wool where it's not as valuable. And therefore, since he's chayav to provide for both of them, he's better off buying the lower quality reshita geis rather than giving his high quality reshita geis to cover the reshita geis that is owed by the buyer. All right, the Gemara says, "Bimuktashim my time alo." What is the reason that you don't have to give reshita geis from something that is kadosh? Amar kra, because the pasuk says, "Son ka lo tzon ekdesh." It's pretty straightforward. The pasuk says that it has to be your tzon, like we learned in the Mishnah. And if it's your tzon, you give reshita geis. Kodesh, hekdesh is not your tzon, so you're not going to give reshita geis. Where it says, "Taima tiftei brachman tzon lecha," that's only because the pasuk says reshita geis tzon lecha titen lo. Without that pasuk, havamina kodoshim chayavim bereshita geis. Your assumption would have been that kodoshim are chayavim reshita geis. Ha lav bnei gizan hinu. They're not subject to gizan. What exactly are you thinking that would make you chayav over here? That you need a pasuk to tell you that you are patur? That's not to say that you can't shear them. You could shear them, and you could do it illegally. But it's the pasuk. It's not coming to address somebody who's violating the din of kodoshim. Shearing the animal and telling you, oh, you're patur from reshita geis. Torah doesn't address those types of cases. That's not something that you need a pasuk for in order to tell you that information. If it's something that was kodesh mizbeach, a chanami, that would be true because of lota goes b'chor tzonecha. Because they are not shearing your b'chor is because the b'chor is something that would go on mizbeach. Or even if it doesn't go on mizbeach, it's psulei mukdashim. Those are things that are kodesh mizbeach. They are precluded or excluded from shearing. Over here we're speaking about kodshei berekabayit. Vaha amar Rabbi Elazar kodshei berekabayit asurim begiza v'avoda. Don't we have a locha that's brought by Rabbi Elazar that when it comes to kodshei berekabayit, you're not allowed to shear them, you're not allowed to do work with them. Even though technically whatever they do, whatever they shear belongs to berekabayit, you're not allowed to do it. Mar says that's not a problem, either Rabbanan. That's only a rabbinic injunction. But midoraita, you could shear them and you could do avoda with them. So sakadat chamina o midoraita b'nei gizaninu, since mina Torah, you could shear them. Heichi de gazazle, leitivle. That if you do the shearings, then you'd have to give it to the Kohen. Where it says, v'hakadishlo. Wait a minute, it's kadosh. What does that mean, give it to the Kohen? It's kadosh, it belongs to Hekdesh. So what would be the point of giving it to the Kohen if it's kadosh? So sakadat chamina, I would have thought, lifrok. You'd have to redeem it, velatively, and then give it to him. It says, Vaboi Hamodo Varocha. You need to have it be assessed by the Kohen to determine its value before you monetize it. And that requirement, stand by Mido told you, Kohen, Veri Choto, a Kohen. So anything that has a din of Hamadar Varocha, it has to be brought before the Kohen, standing and quote unquote alive. situation in which this fails many times is if the animal dies. Even though there's value to the animal that's dead, the carcass, or that which is there, you can't do hamada varocha, because the animal can't stand up in order to be assessed. So despite the fact that there is value here, there's no hamada varocha, and for that reason you have to bury it, and it's asur bahana'a, because you can't redeem it. So that din of hamada varocha applies to the wool as well. So then, if that's the case, once you've sheared the wool, it doesn't stand up. It can't be brought as hamada varocha. Tosva wants to know why being makdish the giza is any different than being makdish itzim v'avanim. When you're makdish something to perek habayit, the item that is mukdash to perek habayit, you don't say it needs hamada varocha. You were makdish it for its value. Whatever its value is, that's what the ekdesh is. We don't demand hamada varocha. Hamada varocha is for something that is a live entity. Then you need hamada varocha, which means if you're makdish a live animal, you need hamada varocha. So the Baal HaTos would say, since the wool derives from an animal which it was attached to that demands hamada varocha, sarich hamada varocha, even after you shear it off, it still has a demand for the hamada varocha. But that's not true by Eitzim uva'avanim, because they never had a din of hamada varocha, and therefore when you're makdish them, they don't require hamada varocha. And that's why the Gemara here makes the demand, even though it's an inanimate object. Now this wool, nevertheless, makes the demand for hamada varocha, and since that's a deficit in your ability to be poden, and your ability to redeem it. That works well according to the one who says that kodshei perek habayit don't have that requirement. It's only true by kodshei mizbeach, it's not true by kodshei perek habayit. The man damar hayu, that they are included in the din of hamada varocha, ma'ika the meimar. Then where is the case that you have kodashim that you need a miut for? If you believe they don't need hamada varocha, I found you this case. It was kodshei perek habayit that you sheared, even though you weren't supposed to, because Drabanan, you weren't supposed to do it. You sheared it. Midoraita, you're allowed to shear it. It's still Kodesh after you shear it. Well, you'll redeem it, and then you'll give it to the Kohen. That's what you thought. That's why I have the word Somcha to teach you. In that case, you don't have to do it. According to one who says that you need Hamadar Varocha for the Kodesh Perek Habayit, then you still can't redeem these items, and you still can't get them to be Chulin, where you would give them as Matnas Kuna. So Ramani Bar Potish, he was matish his animals to perek habayit with the exclusion of the shearings. He was matish the animal, not the shearings. He retained the shearings for himself. So you would think that you'd have to shear it and give the matnot kuna over here, the reshit ageis. That's be your tzon and not tzon of ekdesh. So again, the shearings aren't the determinant factor. It is the tzon. Since the tzon is owned by Ekdesh, then the shearings, quote-unquote, don't have a din of tzoncha, and so therefore, you don't have to give reshit ageis. Where it says, Iochi, if that's what you're thinking, kodshei mizbeach nami. So what about kodshei mizbeach? You can say the same thing. He's makdish the animal, not the shearings to the mizbeach. Where it says, kochashei, he weakens it. So that would be mi'ilah in kodshim, because when you shear the animal, it has an impact on the animal, weakens the animal that has been sheared. So if you do that to kodshei mizbeach, then you're moel in the kodshei mizbeach. Rashi says, kodshei perek habayit nami kachashei. Wait a minute, that's true by kodshei mizbeach, it's no less true by kodshei perek habayit. So even if you retain for yourself the right to shear it, you're still diminishing the value of the sheep, not just because you sheared it. That was already a given. You retained that value. The residual sheep that's there, the core sheep, is now worth less or is weakened by this, and that didn't retain for yourself. So, Damar chutz migiza v'kichisha. That's all you said, yes, I'm going to be makdishit, X the shearings, and X the weakness that we caused by that shearing. So you retain that value for yourself, which means you retain the shearings, plus the result of the shearings, that value you retain for yourself. So, kodshei mizbeach nami, Damar chutz migiza v'kichisha. So, okay, so if you can do that by kodshei perek habayit, why can't you do that by kodshei mizbeach as well? You be madishit x the shearing, x the weakness that is caused. It says afilo achi pashta kedusha bikula. You can't manage that. By kodshei perek habayit, it's a value question. You're giving basically value to the mikdash, and the question is, which part of the value are you giving? And you can divide value up. You can retain some for yourself. You can give some to the mikdash. There's no automatic kedusha over there. It's all about what you are makdish. By kodshei mizbeach, there's inherent kedusha to the animal now, because when you're makdish to go on the mizbeach, it's not for its monetary value, it's for the animal to get on the mizbeach. The behemoth itself has inherent kedusha. That inherent kedusha cannot be contained or limited. it spreads to the entirety of the animal. It makes the whole animal kadosh, irrespective of what you think or what you dictated. For instance, Uminat Tamra, I can show you that that's true. Damar of Yossi, Balo b'mugdashim. When it comes to something that is hektesh, kochem mizbeach, haomer raglash uzo ola. He says about an animal, this leg is an ola, kula ola. The whole thing turns into an ola. About Philo Rabbi Meir, who disagrees, Damar ain't kula ola, that it doesn't spread to the entirety of the animal. That's only if you're makdish something that is not life-sustaining. That if you remove it, it won't lose its life from that. On the other hand, if you're makdish a particular part of the animal, which is a life-dependent limb of the animal, or life-dependent section of the animal, then the kedusha spreads to the entirety of the animal. This is from the Gemara in Tmura, which is trying to prove, how do you know that by tmura, if you only do tmura on a portion of the animal, it should spread to the entirety of the animal. So they start with the basis of hektesh. By hektesh, this is the view. Just like by hektesh, it works this way. So too by tmura, it should work this way. That's the context in which this was said. But there, it makes it clear that if you're makdish the animal, the kochim is veah, and it's about a part of the animal that is life-sustaining, then that kedusha spreads everywhere and you can't control it. So, according to Rabbi Meir, if you do that to a leg, you can maintain it. A leg can be taken off and the animal could survive. Given that, the kedusha doesn't spread. On the other hand, the Tanakhama there believes that it does spread even in that case. But Rabbi Meir says, okay, if you're makdish the head of the animal, then for sure it's going to spread to the entire animal, because there you're makdish something that is shemat v'yabo. Over here, you're makdish the whole animal, ex the shearings. It's clear here that you are makdish something that is shemat v'yabo. If that's the case, then it should spread to the entirety of the animal, including the shearings, including the weakness. You don't have any way to maintain or give a residual to yourself, because the kedusha spreads irrespective of your thoughts or feelings over here. Just like when you makdish the head, it spreads the whole animal. So if you makdish the animal, for sure, then it's going to spread to everything that's on the animal. So that's the answer of Ramani Bar Potish, Yishum Rabbi Yanai, that the scenario here is a case where it's chutz migizah v'kichisha. And the difference between kochei perek abayit and kochei mizbeach is kochei perek abayit, you can control the kedusha, because it's a monetary kedusha, and you can determine to what it applies and to what it doesn't apply, and you can segregate out the giza v'kichisha. A kochei mizbeach, you can't control the kedusha. When the kedusha devolves upon the animal, it spreads the entire animal, and that's why by kochei mizbeach, there's no concept like this. So then soncha comes to say that even though you were makdish this the perek abayit, and you left for yourself the reshit hageiz and the kichisha, nevertheless, you don't have to give reshit hageiz, because the tzon is not tzoncha, it's tzon hekdesh. Rav amar v'makdish giza atzma. It's a case where you makdish the giza itself. Sakadat chamina, I would have thought, the gzos, v'lifrok, v'leiteblei. You were makdish the shearings to hekdesh. Koche berek abayit. Technically, you don't own it anymore, you have no obligation vis-a-vis it, because you now basically sold it to Hekdesh. Nevertheless, I would have thought, since you originally owned the animal, and you still own the animal, Tzoncha, but and you only gave the shearings to Hekdesh, that you'd be chayav to give Reshit Hageiz from those shearings. Problem is, it all belongs to Hekdesh now. How are you going to do that? The answer is, you're going to have to redeem it, and then give it to the Kohen. We're going to obligate you to redeem a portion of that shearing, and then grant it to the Kohen as fulfillment of your Reshit Hageiz. So Amar Kara, the pasuk says, "Geiz soncha tin leino." Mishein b'chutzar le gizav v'netina. The pasuk says, "Geiz and titain." So something that only requires shearing and giving, that is obligated in reshit hageiz. It says, "Zeh." This is not included in that obligation because it's mechutzar gizav p'tia u'netina. There's an extra step in here, which is shearing, redeeming, and then giving. Because of that extra step, then it's precluded from reshit hageiz. But that means Rova says the reason that Hekdesh is patur mi reshita geiz has nothing to do with tzoncha, it has to do with geiz and titain. And that's why the Gemara asks right now, ela tzoncha, the mayato. Then what does he do with the word tzoncha? So now you have a machloke between Rova and Rav Mani Bar Potish as to what is the source of the patur of Hekdesh in the Mishnah. Rav Mani Bar Potish says the source is tzoncha, hello tzon kodoshim. That's the patur. Then you have to figure out the scenario in which it's relevant. And that we took us a while until we got to the point where it was speaking about kochei perek abayit, where you makdish the animal, but left the shearings and the weakness for yourself. That's a scenario where it's applicable. And to that, the Mishnah says, Soncha v'lonson hekdesh. Rava says, the scenario is a simple scenario. You were makdish, the shearings. And the reason you're padur has nothing to do with the word soncha, has to do with the fact that you don't have the what's needed in the Torah, which is geiz and titain. You have geiz, ptia, and titain. You have an extra step in there that makes you padur from the reshita geiz in this instance, and that's the source for the padur by Kodoshim over here. Tosfo points out that Mani Bar Potish can hold a Rabba's drasha, but Rabba doesn't necessarily hold a Mani Bar Potish's drasha, because of the fact that the Gemara asks, what do you do with the word soncha? So given that, it's clear that Rabba doesn't hold a Mani Bar Potish, but for Mani Bar Potish, he could hold a Rabba's din as well. But then the Gemara wants to know, soncha, according to Rabba, what do you do with soncha? That, the Gemara says, like Daniel, for the Braita, Be'imata Shutafim Chayav Rishita Geis, Rabbi Eli Poter. So when it comes to a partnership in an animal, the Tanakhama says you are Chayav in Reshita Geis. Rabbi Eli says you are Poter. My time of the Rabbi Eli. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Eli's position here that you are Poter? Amarkra Tzoncha Velo Sho Shutafut. That's be your tzon, meaning individually owned by you, and not owned by partners, not having multiple owners of the animal. Rabbanan, the Rabbanan disagree and say it's mutei shutafut ovei kochavim. It's only to exclude a partnership with a goy, not a partnership with a Jew. To explain the difference, Rashi says, along the lines of what you're suggesting over here, there's a difference between Jewish partners and a partnership with a non-Jew. Jewish partners, each individual is chayav in reshita geiz, and therefore they can be viewed as a single unit, which is Israel. And many times the Torah calls B'nai Israel in the singular form as the entity Klal Israel. And so the word Tzoncha over here would not mean Tzon HaMiuchadecha, your particular Tzon that is solely owned by you, but rather Tzoncha would be Tzon Yisrael. Tzoncha means a Tzon of Bar Chiyuva, a Tzon of Jews. And that would be the meaning of Tzoncha. And in that way, they think that a shutafut of Yisraelim would be chayav in Reshita Geiz, whereas a shutafut with Novi Kuchavim, which doesn't have that, then would be patur mi Reshita Geiz. Hey, Rabbi Eli, shutafut Ovei Kuchavim in Ale, has he know that a non-Jewish shutaf doesn't give Reshita Geiz? Nafkele mi Reshita Kro. He learns it out from the beginning of the pasuk, because the pasuk says, Reshit digancha tiroshcha v'yitzarecha, truma, Reshit geiz soncha titein lo. So the juxtaposition of the two tells you, Reshit gancha velo shutafut uvei kochavim. The Reshit gancha is chayav in truma, but not if you are in a partnership with a goy. So that's Reshit gancha teaches you about the goy, and then the Reshit geiz soncha teaches you about a Jew. Because you already know about a goy from the beginning of the pasuk, the juxtaposition to truma. So then, by soncha, it must be telling you something more. That more is, even a shutafut with a Jew would be patur from reshita geiz. Rabbanan, why don't they learn it out from truma? Because reshit hifsika inyan. The pasuk divides it up. It doesn't say reshit gancha tirosh kavitzarecha vegeiz soncha titein lo. It says reshit gancha tirosh kavitzarecha vereshit geiz soncha titein lo. So it divides them up into two entities, and therefore you can't learn the geiz from the Truma. Rabbi Eli, Vav Hadar Arve. That's why you have a Vav Achibur there. Reshit Gancha Tirosh Chavi Tzarecha V'Reshit Geitzoncha Titeno. That Vav is Mechaber it back to the Dagan or the Truma. And therefore, if you're not Chayav by Truma, you're also not going to be Chayav by Reshit Geiz. Rabbanan's response to him is, Lo Nechtov Rachmana Lo Vav V'Lo Reshit. For you, you have the word Reshit which splits it up, and then you have the letter Vav that brings it back together. Just leave out the word reshit and leave out the word vav, and you would have the same result. Then why write the word reshit at all? Rabbi Eli, I did the high kedushat damim, the high kedushat aguf, posik lo v'hadar arve lo. Because they are different types of kedusha, therefore the Torah splits them up and then brings them back together. Truma, it has kedushat aguf because it is asura lizarim. Truma cannot be eaten by a zar, it can only be eaten by a kohen. So it has like a kedushat aguf, because just like a korban, once it has kedushat aguf, can't be utilized by anyone, it's asur, and then depending on the process, and the results afterwards, it'll belong to the Kohen, to the Balim, but they have to be eaten under the rules of that Kedusha. So too, Truma has that type of rule with regards to who can eat it, because of the inherent Kedusha, as well as the Kohen himself. He has to be Tahor, he can't be Tameh when he eats it, or if the Truma becomes Tameh, it affects it. On the other hand, Reshita Geis, it is just a monetary item, even though the Gemara here calls the Reshita Geis Kedusha Tamim, Rashi over here says not that it really has Kedusha, he says Kedusha Lav Dafka. It just means that it's the same properties as Kedushat Damim, which is that it's a monetary item, and the gift, what's been given to the Kohen, is the monetary value. That's similar to Kedushat Damim. But not that there's any Kedushah, per se, in Reshita Geis. And even though the Gemara in other places compares Bechor to Reshita Geis, and Bechor does have inherent Kedushah, Rashi explains in those situations, it means that they both don't need to be Mukdash. Bechor, the Hekdesh happens by itself, and so too, the Reshita Geis is Reshita Geis by itself, but not that there's any inherent Kedusha. There are those that disagree and believe that Reshita Geis does have inherent Kedusha, especially given the Gemara's correlation with Kedusha Tamim here and before in other places. And therefore, they do believe that Reshita Geis does have some inherent Kedusha to it, against what Rashi says over here. So that distinction is why the Torah split them up, Reshita Gadcha from Reshita Geis. Once it did that, it had to put a vav in there to reconnect them, to tell you the dinim of Reshita Gancha impact on the dinim of Reshita Geis. So that's the first explanation of the machloke between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eloi, that the machloke revolves around whether you can learn from Truma or you can't learn from Truma. Everybody agrees that a shutaf oved kuchavim is patur from Reshita Geis. The only question is a shutaf Yisrael a chayav in Reshita Geis, with the Chachamim saying yes, and Rabbi Eloi saying no. The difference in their opinion has to do with whether you learn out the shutaf with the Oved Chachamim being patur from Truma, or you don't learn it. The Chachamim say you can't learn it from Truma, then they use Soncha to teach you a shutafut with the Oved Chachamim is what's patur. Shutafut Yisrael is not addressed. That means you're chayav. On the other hand, Rabbi Eloi, who learns out shutafut Oved Chachamim from Truma, he already has an exclusion for that. So now Tzoncha, what is he going to exclude from that? Tzoncha below Tzon Shutafut Yisrael. Even if you're partnered with Yisrael, you won't be Chayav in Reshita Geis. So that's the first explanation. Ibai Deima. Here's the second explanation of their Machloket. Shutafut Goy B'Truma Rabbonon Chiyuve Mechayve. The Rabbonon believe that when you are in a partnership with a Goy, you're still Chayav in Trumot. That's the difference between them and Rabbi Eloi, and that precipitates their machloket with regards to a shutafut b'Yisrael. And that's because the Tanya, Yisrael bovid kochavim, shulachusadeh b'shutafut. They purchased a field in partnership. Tevel v'chulin mu'uravim zebazed divrei Rabbi. Rabbi says you now have chulin and tevel all mixed together, because here you have partners that are one that is chayav, one that is patur, and so the one who is chayav has problems with Tevel and Truma. One that's Patur does not. And now they're all mixed together. It's a big mess. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Shal Yisrael Chayav, Shal Oved Kochavim Patur. That which the Jew takes of the produce is Chayav. That which the Goy takes is Patur. And Adkan lo plige, their machloket over there is, the Mar Sever Yesh Breira. Shimon Gamliel believes that there is Breira, whereas Mar Sever Rabbi believes Ein Breira. According to both of them, you're only chayav for 50% of the produce there. You are chayav to take off Trumot and Masrot from. That is your part of it, your possession. The question only is, can you segregate or figure out which is your part? According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, since there is Breira, that means when we subdivide the crop, we subdivide the produce, what came to me is what belonged to me. And what went to you belonged to you. That means that everything I have is chayav in Trumot and Masrot. And everything you have is patur in Trumot and Masrot. And that's the view of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi says, there is no Breira. That means when you divide it up later on, every single piece, every single kernel has part patur, part chayav in it, because we are joint owners over everything. When we subdivide it, it's a matter of convenience. We're not really giving you what's yours and what's mine. We're giving to you the partnership. And I'm giving you 50% of the partnership, and you're getting 50% of the partnership. The composition of that partnership is 50% patur, 50% chayav. And that's what you end up with. Exactly that mixture. So Gemara says, yes, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi argue about Yesh Breira or not, about Shutavut Oved Kochavim, Tibia Kol Chayevet. Nobody over here says that you're Patur, the Gamre, because you're in a partnership with the Oved Kochavim. So now their machloket would be, what happens when you get into a partnership by Truma with a Goy? According to the Rabbanon, you're chayav in truma. If you're chayav in truma, that means that the gancha didn't do anything to exclude that case. So if that's true, then you need the word soncha to teach you v'lo shutafut imrovi kochavim. Because everybody here would agree that you can learn reshit hageis from truma. The only question is, what's the din by truma? According to the chachamim, you are chayav in truma when you're in a partnership with a goy. And they prove that from the Braita that says Rabbi and Rav Shimon Gamliel agree that you're chayav. Just a question of how you deal with being chayav. But you are chayav in that partnership. So if I learned from the truma to reshit hageis, I would have said a partnership with a goy would be chayav. So therefore I need soncha to come along and mitigate that and say by reshit hageis that's not true. By truma it is true that you are chayav, but by reshit hageis you're not chayav because of soncha. On the other hand, Rabbi Eloi believes that when you're in a partnership with a goy by truma, you're also patur. Patur legamre. You don't have to give anything at all. So then once that's true, by soncha, I don't need soncha for that by reshit hageis because I already learned that from truma. So then soncha would be left over to teach you below shutafut Yisrael. That's the view of Rabbi Eloi in this case. The question is, what do the Chachamim do with the word degancha? The word degancha, according to them, does not exclude a partnership with a goy, and you are chayav in tumult when it comes to a partnership with a goy. So Rashi over here discusses v'degancha. What do they do with degancha? They me'ute digun oveid kochavim. Comes to exclude the digun, the produce of an oveid kochavim, kagon. Oveid kochavim shelakach sadeh shel Yisrael umircha. The first way Rashi explains it is, if a non-Jew buys the produce off the Jew before the gemar malocha that makes it chayav in truma, which is mircha, which is the splattening out or the smoothing out of the pile after you've done all the processing of the grains. That's the final stage, the gemar malocha on the miruach hadagan. That's what makes you chayav in truma. If before that the Jew sold it to the goy, and the goy did the miruach hakri, he was the one who did the flattening of the pile, he's the one who processed it, then that produce is patur mi trumot masrot, and therefore if a Jew buys it from him afterwards, or eats by the goy, there's no din of trumot and masrot, even though it was owned by a Jew in the beginning, since the gemar malach was done by a goy, that's a patur for that produce. So that's one possibility as to what the chachamim do with the gancha. To teach you miruach ovid kochavim is patur mitrumot masrot. Inami, another possibility is, degancha v'lo dagan ovid kochavim l'shminin, v'yesh kinyan ovid kochavim v'eretz Yisrael afkia miyad maser. To teach you that if a goy owns something in Eretz Yisrael, it's not chayav in trumot masrot. He has sufficient ownership in the land to make it that it's not chayav in the mitzvot atluyot baretz. That's a question many times in Shas. What is the power of an ovid kochavim in Eretz Yisrael? When he acquires property in Eretz Yisrael, does he really have a right of ownership to the point where he now mefkiyah from the necessity to be mekayim the mitzvah atluyot baretz? Or does he have basically a leasehold in the land, which means that yes, he is the owner and controls it right now, but as far as kedushat haaretz, he doesn't have enough ownership to be mefkiyah. Therefore, his produce that comes from there is going to be chayav in trumot masrot. Obviously, he's not going to do it, and if he eats it, he's not going to be chayav in it. But if a Jew buys that produce, he's going to have to take off trumot masrot. Rashi suggests the other possibility is that the gancha comes to teach you that yesh kinyan, that if the oveid kochavim buys into the land, he makes it patur because he has sufficient ownership to be poter it from the mitzvot atluyot baretz. Those are the two possibilities Rashi offers as to what the chachamim do with the word the gancha. They're not excluding a partnership with the goy. What is it telling you? So one possibility is telling you if he does the gemar malocha, it's patur mi trumot masrot. The other one saying that if he owns the land, it will be patur mi trumot masrot. So one of those two things is what the chachamim come to teach you because of the gancha. Now he says, well, if that's the case, then what about soncha? If you're telling me the gancha means not a partnership with the goy, but the goy himself being patur, why don't you read soncha the same way? And say soncha is not going to exclude a partnership with the goy, it's going to tell you that the goy himself is patur. So to that, Rashi answered, Dagagan keman depolig dami. That is because Dagan is different than Tzon. Dagan is, by definition, subdivided, or is broken into its individual parts. You do it by measurement, you weigh it, it's called Dagancha once it comes into your possession. By Tzon, ko beima beima, yesh lo vekuchavim chelek ba. By every one of the animals, the goy has a partnership in that item. Lo karinan b'chad aminayu soncha. no one entity is tzoncha. By tzon or by shearings, each tzon is owned jointly by the parties, and the shearings that come off of it are a result of a joint ownership of the animals. You're not subdividing the animal. You can't split the animal in half and give it to each other. They're not disparate units or parts to it that you can subdivide. We both own 50% of a whole item. We don't have 50% and 50% that can be subdivided that we've just pulled together. By the gun, that's not true. By the gun, you can't subdivide it because it's disparate parts. And that means whatever comes to me is the gun cha, is my dagan. What goes to the goy is not the gun cha. By the tzon, you can't call it tzon cha, even if you're in a partnership with the goy, because the tzon is jointly owned by both of you all the way through. And there's no subdivision of the tzon. There's no natural divide in the tzon that makes it that is yours, tzon cha, and that's not yours. By grain, you do have that capacity. And therefore, Rashi says the chachamim learned by the gun cha, not to exclude a shutafut with Ovi Kochavim, but rather to exclude an Ovi Kochavim, period. Whereas by tzon cha, they learn it to exclude a shutafut and not to exclude the goy, per se goy, because by tzon, the goy is always present. Whether it's him himself that owns the animal, or whether it's him owning with the Jew, he's ever present in this situation here, and therefore there's no tzon cha. By dagan, you can move away from the goy in the partnership by dividing up the assets, and the goy is dagan, and this is your dagan. And that way you do have dagan cha, you can segregate out your dagan cha. Now, Tosafot doesn't love that explanation of Rashi, because in this instance, what Rashi is telling you is that if I just told you dagan cha by the dagan, you could have learned from the gancha to tzon, but if there is a natural distinction, then what you should say is, just like by dagan, the Oved Kochavim is patur, so too by tzon, the Oved Kochavim himself is patur. But then Rashi says, by tzon, the definition, if the goy is patur, then a goy in a partnership is patur, because the goy can't be separated out. And therefore you don't need the word tzoncha to teach you that, you can learn it out of the gancha. By the gancha, where you can separate the items, then you can have the gancha and the gan agoy. So then when he's a goy alone, he's patur. But when he's joined with you, you're not patur. But by tzon, when you can't make that distinction, then a goy being patur makes him patur when he's alone, makes him patur for the Yisrael when he's together with the Yisrael. If that's the case, why do you need the word tzoncha at all? You could have learned it all from Truma, and when you apply it to Reshita Gaze, then it works that it is not only Oser the goy, it's Oser the goy plus the shutafut. Because by definition, a shutafut by Reshita Gaze is the equivalent of the goy being ever present there. And given that, you would have been patur. So that's what it says. If Rashi is correct about that logic, then you wouldn't need the word tzoncha over here at all. And therefore, that can't be the explanation over here. Although then, Tosafot says that according to Rashi's first explanation, where he said the gancha was coming to pubilter the miruach of the Oved Kochavim, then you would need it. Because if you're using the gancha to teach you about miruach of the Oved Kochavim, because otherwise, how would you know that a shutafut of Oved Kochavim is patur by Reshita Gaze? Because all you know from Shuma is about a goy's owner, Miruach. And therefore, you're going to need Tzoncha to teach you about a goy himself. How do you know about a goy with a partnership? And that would be the logic that Rashi is dictating. So Tosafot says that Rashi's logic only works according to the first way he explained it, that the Gancha means the Gancha below Miruach of Oved Kochavim, but doesn't work or doesn't make sense when you say it's the Gancha comes to exclude and Ovei Kochavim, that he has a kinyan lafkia midei tumot to masrot, because over there, then you wouldn't need the word tzoncha at all. So Tosafot says that Rashi's logic only makes sense according to his first explanation, not according to his second explanation. So now then, Rashi goes on after that to explain how do you actually deal with the fact that you're in a partnership with a goy when it comes to truma. And he brings down two different possibilities. He says, if you have here what's Tevel uChulin Murvim Zebzeh, according to Rabbi, you have Chulin and Tevel that are mixed together, what do you do in that case? Vanisha Mati, Shein Lo Takana. There's nothing to do. You're stuck. You now have every piece of crop, produce that you have is a mix between Patur and Chiyuv, and there's no way to deal with it. The fish in Balafrish, Nimzama Frish, Mina Patur Ala Chiyuv. So anytime you come to me, Mafrish, you're going to be mafrish, whatever you take off is going to be patur ala chiyuv, because something is patur, and you take it off of something that is chayav, and you'll never be able to separate it out to avoid the patur and the chiyuv. So Rashi says about that, I don't think that's true. Rashi says there are two ways to solve the problem, and I disagree with those that say that there is no solution to the problem. One way to solve the problem is to take off from something else. which is, you know that 50% of whatever's here is chayav. So if you go to other produce that you have where you don't have a partnership with the goy, that's chayav in Trumot Masorot, you can separate out on a ratio basis what you need to separate out from this grain. So say that there's 100 grain over here, and then you have 200 that's your own over there. So the 100 with the goy, 50 of that is chayav in Trumot Masorot, 50 is not. So from the 200 that you have in the back, you're going to have to take off Trumot Masorot from that as well. But you'll take off Trumot Masorot from that itself, plus you'll take off four the stuff that you have jointly with the Ovid Kohanim. So you'll take off from the 200 the equivalent of 250 worth of Trumot Masorot, and in that way you'll cover the grains that you're chayav for. So that's one way to do it. You are allowed to do that, assuming that they are close together, they're proximate to each other. You're allowed to be mafrish from a chiyuv al chiyuv. As long as it's the same type, the same quality, all of those things match up, then you're allowed to do that. So you could do that in this case and solve the problem. That's one way to solve the problem, Rashi says. The second way to solve the problem is, Rashi says, minei uve. You're mafrish from the pile itself. That what you did with the goy, you're mafrish from it. If you're mafrish from it, you're going to end up in the right position, which is that now you have over here, let's call it 100 worth of grain and materials over here. That 100 that you have has to have Trumot and Masorot taken off of it. So let's assume that you have to take off 10% of that to get the Masorot that you need. So if you have to take off 10%, there'd be 10 out of the 100 that you would take off would then get you the Masorot. The problem is that when you take off that 10%, some of it's patur, some of it is chayav. Rashi says, no problem. We assume when you take a sample out of a mixture, what comes out of the sample has the same distribution as the main body itself. Which means that if the grains are 50 patur, 50 chayav, and when you're mafish truma or maestro from it, you're getting 50% chayav and 50% patur. So over there, you're going to have to take off the full 10%. You won't be able to take off just 5% off of it. You say, listen, I only own 50% of this. If I own 50% of this, then out of that 100, only 50 belongs to me. The 10% of that is 5. So I can just take off 5, that should be patur. Rashi says that won't work. Because in that 5%, only 50% of it is chayav and 50% is patur. So you have to take off a full 10%. In the mixture of taking off the full 10%, 5% of it is patur, 5% of it is chayav. That total of 10% will match up to the same ratios that you have in the pile itself, which is 50% chayav and 50% patur. So therefore, when you take off the 10% from that pile itself, you're getting what you need. You're getting 5% chayav, 5% patur. But that's exactly what you need. You need 5% chayav and 5% patur, because that's what's in the pile, the ratios of the pile itself between you and the Ovid Kohanim. So Rashi says, even if you take off Truma from itself, it should work. Because the division, the ratios in the Maaser and Truma itself match the ratios of the full pile. But again, you'd have to take off the full amount. To get to your 5% chayav, you have to take off 10%. Because in that ratio, 50-50, in the 10%, to get your 5% chayav, you have to take off a full 10%. But once you do that, your sample will have the same ratio as the main body. And therefore, you get the Truma that you need to take off. So Rashi says, I think you can solve this problem in one of two ways, and therefore, I don't think there is any issue over here in terms of taking off Trumot Masorot, even according to Rabbi. For Shimon Gamliel, there's Breira, it's not even a question. You just take off from yours, because that's yours. The Goy's is his. But here with Rabbi, who says it's all mixed together, Rashi says there is a solution over here. Now, those that object to this solution of Rashi, and Rashi himself in other places in Chaz indicates something along these lines, is that we don't believe that the sample you take off matches the actual product. So in that case, if you took off from a Trumot Masorot from the 100 that belongs to you and the goy, which is 50-50, doesn't mean in the sample you're going to get 50-50. If you were to get another ratio in the sample, then it wouldn't work, because then there's a possibility you take from the patur la chayav or the chayav la patur. So the only way this works, according to Rashi, is if you believe the sample or the Trumot Masorot you take off have the exact same ratio as the main pile or the main body of grain that's there, and therefore you can solve your problem in that manner. Right, so that's the second way that they explain it. Here's a third way to explain the machloket between them, which is Ibai Dema Tavayu the Rabbi Eli Mitzoncha Nafka. Rabbi Eli agrees that you can't learn out from Truma, and he learns out both things from Tzoncha, both to exclude Ovid Kohanim and to exclude a Jewish partnership. Shutvut Ovid Kohanim, my taima. What's the reason that a partnership with a goy, you're not chayav in Reshita Geis? Delo miachtele, because it's not uniquely owned by you. The Israel Nami. When you're in a partnership with a Jew, it's the same problem. It's not uniquely yours. So Rabbi Eli therefore defines Tzoncha to mean Tzon Shelcha, meaning literally yours and solely yours. So therefore, when you're in a partnership with a goy, it's not chayav rishit geis because it's not exclusively yours. That same problem exists even if you're in a partnership with a Jew. It's not exclusively yours. And therefore, from the word soncha, Rabbi Elai is able to exclude both shutafut oved kuchavim and shutafut Yisrael. V'rabbonon oved kuchavim la bar chiyuvo Yisrael bar chiyuvo. So this is what you said before when we explained the Gemara before. The difference between an oved kuchavim and a Jew is an oved kuchavim is not a bar chiyuvo. And therefore, it's not called soncha because it's not miyuchad lecha. But when it's another Jew or fellow Jew, it is soncha because we view you as being two peas in a pot. Because you are both Israelim, you're both chayav and reshit geis, therefore it is soncha. Because Kol Yisrael, Yikraim b'lashon yachid, all of Bnei Yisrael are addressed as a single entity called Klal Yisrael. And that single entity is what owns the tzon here, and that's soncha. That qualifies as being soncha, and therefore you would be chayav and reshit geis according to the Chachamim. So that's the third way to explain their machloket. So we have here three ways to explain machloket between Rabbi Eloi and the Rabbanon. In the first explanation, we said they're arguing about whether you can learn from Truma to Reshita Geis. And the machloket is, can you or can you not? In the second version, everybody agrees you can learn from Truma to Reshita Geis. The question is, what's the din by Truma? According to Chachamim, you're chayav when it comes to partnership with the goy by Truma. And therefore, it doesn't help you by Reshita Geis. And therefore, you have to learn everything from Reshita Geis. And you only have one miut. That means it teaches you not Ovei Kuchavim, but Yisrael partnership would be Chayav. The other hand, Rabbi Eloi believes that if you're in a partnership with a goy, you are patur by Truma. And since we're carrying over Truma to Reshit HaGeis, there too you're patur by a partnership. And therefore the Tzoncha comes to exclude a partnership with Yisrael. In the third view, it's a question about the word Tzoncha. Nothing's learned from Truma. Everything's learned from Reshit HaGeis, but the question is what does Tzoncha mean? Does Tzoncha mean your exclusive ownership? To the exclusion of any other partner, whether Jewish or not Jewish, that's the view of Rabbi Eloi. Or the Chachamim would say Tzoncha means someone who is not a Bar Chiyuva like you makes you patur. But if you're in a partnership with a Bar Chiyuva, that is called Tzoncha, and you are Chayav. So those are three different ways to explain their machloket. And now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rabba, Moda Rabbi Eloi b'Truma. Rabbi Eloi agrees by Truma, Da'avagav Yechiv D'Gancha, that even though it says D'Gancha, which you would have darshaned from it, Tidcha in, D'Shutafu Lo, that you would have said that's your Dagan and not the partnership's Dagan. Nevertheless, that we don't darshan that because Kotav Rachmana, Trumotechem. Because the Pasuk says Trumotechem, which rebundles it or makes you Chayav, even when it's Trumotechem. When it's the Truma Shelachem, when you're in a partnership. So if that's the case, then the Gancha by Truma can't be darshan to exclude a Shutafut, because you have a reboy from the word Trumotechem. Where it says, Ela the Gancha, Lamali. If that's the case, then why do you need the word D'Gancha at all? The Mute Shutafut Oved Kuchavim. To tell you that you can't, in a partnership with an Oved Kuchavim, you would be Patur. So even though Rabbi Eloi believes that by Reshit HaGeis, not only is a partnership with the Goy make you Patur, even a partnership with Israel makes you Patur, he does not say the same thing by Truma, because it's a specific reboy by Truma of Trumotechem, to tell you that a partnership with a Jew is still Chayav in Trumot. Now, the little problem with this is that the word Trumotechem does not appear in the Torah. The question is, what's the Gemara quoting over here? You can see over here it says Trumotechem, and there's no Torah or over here telling you where this Pasuk is. So what most do is quote from the Pasuk in Yechezkel, in Perek Mem Dalet, Pasuk Lam, and it says, Reshit kol bigrei chol, v'chol trumot kol, mikol trumotechem lakohanim iye. So there you see the word Trumotechem. So it's possible that they're using the word from Yechezkel. The only issue is that this is a din d'oraita. So if it's a din d'oraita, what's it doing in Yechezkel? Why are we learning out of Yechezkel and not something from the Torah? The answer that the Gemara gives in many places is that it was a Mesorah that we had originally. And then Yechezkel wrote down the Mesorah, so now that it's actually documented the Mesorah. Not that it was something that Yechezkel introduced. It was always something that you were chayav in. And Yechezkel just wrote it down to document the fact that you're chayav in a shutafut with Yisrael. That's how you would have to learn it. It is possible that it's referencing Bamidbar Yudchet, Pasuk Chavzayim, which is Parshat Korach. Over there the Pasuk says, V'nechshav lachem trumatchem ki dagan min hagoren u'kumeya min hayoked. So that it says over there, trumatchem, even though in the context in which it's spoken about, it's v'nechshav lachem trumatchem. That Truma that you take off, which really is Trumat Maser over there, That Trumatchem kedagan min hagoren is like Truma. Trumat Maser is the same thing as Truma, but it does use the word Trumatchem. So maybe that's a possibility. Even that's not the word that is mentioned over here in the Gemara, which is Trumotechem. It's possible maybe the Gemara is referencing that Trumatchem in Korach, even though it's referenced to Trumat Maser, it still has the same din as Truma, and therefore it would reflect on Truma itself as well. Tosfo points out that he thinks Rava is following the last of the three setups that we suggested for the Machloket Rabbi Elai and the Rabbanon, in which there's no reason to distinguish between a Goy and a Jew. And therefore, if you have an exclusion, it should exclude the partnerships of both a Goy and a Jew. And in each of these instances, we're going to have to find why that's not the case. And so, by Truma, he's suggesting that even though, according to Rabbi Elai's logic, it should have been that you're excluded from all types of partnerships, the word Trumotechem is Mechayev, the case of a Shutafut with Israel. So now the Gemara says, Chala, by Chala, Afagiev the Tziv Reshit, because it says Reshit, there was a Tchem Chala, Tarimu Truma, Kutrumat Goren, Kain Tarimu Ota, Mereshit, Arisutechem, Tinu Lashem Truma, Ledorotechem. So even though it says the word Reshit, Vikola Meimar, Nelif Reshit, Reshit, Mereshit Ageiz, and you would have thought, maybe now I can have a Gezer Shava that teaches me Reshit, Reshit from Reshit Ageiz, and therefore you would be Patur in all these situations. So then, Malalan to Shutafut Lo, Avkan to Shutafut Lo, just like over there by Reshit Ageiz, a partnership is Patur, you would think by Chala, partnership is Patur, Kotav Rachmana, Ariso Techem. So to teach you that even a partnership is Chayav. Ela Taima Dichtiv Ariso Techem. It's only because you have that Reboy that a Shutafut is Chayav. Halavachi Avamina Neli Reshit Reshit Mireshit Ageiz. Otherwise, I would have learned out Reshit from Reshit Ageiz and told you that a partnership is Patur, according to Rabbi Elai. Adarava Neli Mi Truma. Why are you picking to learn out a Gzer Shava Reshit Reshit from Reshit Ageiz to Reshit Arisu Techem? Learn Reshit Asiru Techem from Reshit Gan Chav Tirosh Chav Yitzarecha of the Truma. Why don't you learn from that Reshit? And there we say Rabbi Elai says you are Chayav. Where it says Alkanami. That's right. You are right. We learn it from Truma. El Ariso Techem Lomali. Then what do I use the word Ariso Techem for? Today Ariso Techem. Then in order to be Chayav in Chala, you have to have today Ariso Techem, as Rashi says here, the size of your dough that's in the midbar, that's what makes you Chayav in Chala. That's mentioned by the Parshat Aman, that the Isa of the Torah is an Omer Ligulgolet. The Omer is an Asiri Taifa, is one-tenth of Eifa. Measurement of a Siri Taifa comes out to be Chamisha Lugim Tziporiim, 5 Lug of Tzipori, Shehem Shiva Rivaim Va'od Midbariot, because an Eifa is worth 3 Sa'ah, and each Sa'ah is 6 Kav, so that's 18 Kavin, 1/10 of that a Siri Taifa, that's 1.8 Kavin. And since the Kav is 4 Lug, so if you have 1.8 Kav times 4 Lug, that's 7.2 lug, which is 7 1/5 of a lug, which is basically just 7 lug plus a beitzah and a fifth of a beitzah. And a lug is equal to 6 beitzim. That means that then 1 1/5 beitzah is 1/5 of a lug. And that's what 7.2 lug is what you're chayav in Bamidbar. Then the Gemara speaks about the fact that they increased the size of the measurement. Therefore, it started to reduce it until the point where it was 5/4 of a log by the time you get to the measurements of Tzipori. Because they moved them once from the Midbar to Yerushalayim up a sixth. They moved them another sixth from the Yerushalayim to the time of Tzipori. So by that time, it's Chameshit Rivaim HaLog. It's 5/4 of a log or 1 1/4 log, which is equivalent to the 7 1/5 log of the Midbar. And that's what's Chayav in Chala. So that's what we use the word Arisotechem for. The truth is that the word Arisotechem appears more than once in the Pasuk, so that would have allowed us to learn both items before we changed our mind. Or other limudim the Gemara has from Arisotechem, since it's written multiple times in the Pasuk, you can get more than one limud out of it. By the case of Peya, it says, Ubukutzrachem and Kitzir Atzachem, lo tuchalepat sadecha liktor. Lekit Kitzircha lo tuchalek. Sadcha zidach en shutafut lo. So again, there is sadcha, according to Rabbi Elai, should make it that it's sadcha, below sadcha, shel shutafut. Kadar Rachmanu, bekutzrechem, ekitzir atzechem, in plural. So even though it's sadcha, Kutzurchem is in plural, no matter who is harvesting it, even if partners are harvesting it, you're going to be chayav. Hello, sadka lamali. Then what do you do with the word sadka? Lemulte shutafu dovei kuchavim. To teach you, if you're in a partnership with an avoid kuchavim, you're patur from peya. Bechora. Apaka dichtiv kol bechor asheyi valei bebecharcha betoncha. Didachin de shutafu lo. Again, you have the possessive form of the noun in the singular. So it should be yours and not a partnership. Kotav Rachmano, the pasuk in Parshat Re'ei says, Eveitim shamalotechem zimchechem et masrotechem et shumat yedchem. In the plural. Ela b'karcha b'tzoncha lomali. So then what do you do with the singular form of it? Mutei shutafut obeid kuchavim. To tell you that you are patur when it comes to a shutafut with an obeid kuchavim. Mizuzah. Avagav ditiv beitcha. Because it says, uktadam amizot beitecha uvisharecha. So then beitcha would also be so didachin shutafulo, partnerships should then be patur v'mizuzah. Kadokrana, the pasuk afterwards says, l'man yirbu yimeichem v'yimei b'neichem in the plural form. Ela beitecha l'mayato, then what does beitecha come to teach you? Lika derabo. Dama rabo, rabo says, derech bi'atcha mina yamin. Just like when you start to walk, you put your right foot forward first. So too, when you come into the house, you're going to hit the right doorpost first with your foot. Derech biyatcha, the way you enter the house. And the way you enter the house is right first, that's where the placement of the mezuzah is. That it's satama mezuzah beitecha v'yisherecha. Beitecha teaches you that the mezuzah goes on the right and not the left, because that's derech biyatcha, the way that you enter into the house. And Tosfot just leaves it as a tema as to why here the Gemara doesn't opt to do what it did in all the other cases and say, to exclude a partnership with a goy. That you're not chayav in mezuzah when you're in a partnership with a goy. Like we said by chala, peyah, and bechorah, in all those cases, you are patur when a partnership no week kuchavim. Gemara didn't go in that direction over here. All right, we're going to stop here on the top line of Kuf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph.